The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin. I'm not worried about the first guy that rode a bull. I'm worried about the second guy. I mean, who looks at that and says, huh, it's a good idea. I'm going to do that too.
Red alert.
Hey everyone, Big J here. And in just a moment, I will be presenting you with Pacific 201 Part 2, a fan film production from Pacific 201. Afterwards, please join our critical, not cynical review for our discussions and reactions to the film. Without further ado, here's Pacific 201, Part 2.
I can't detect the Pacific on their assigned heading. They must have deviated.
We have to assume they're operating off course, or at least without a subspace signal.
Or not operating at all.
I won't have any of that talk. The Pacific, she's out there. Just fell down a well or something. Give me the highest sensor resolution you can. Helm, set course for the next grid, warp 2.
Aye, Captain.
This is Captain Isaac Demir. I hereby accept your commander's offer of emergency assistance. Additionally, upon the amicable settlement of terms.
If your commander ensures the safe return of my crew to Federation space, I am certain that it will greatly improve the relations between our peoples and open the door to new diplomatic possibilities in the future.
You endorse the captain's decision to accept aid from the Romulans?
I supported the captain's decision to accept what we had to believe was a genuine offer of humanitarian assistance.
From an enemy vessel.
We are not at war with the Romulans. And the belief that we are put my ship in jeopardy and fostered division among my crew.
What jeopardized the mission was the captain sharing classified information with your crew. A decision that would inspire criminal conspiracy on your ship.
You manufactured an entire mission under suspect pretenses. Respectfully, what did you expect?
You seem to support the notion that Starfleet was involved in a conspiracy.
I suggest that applying the veneer of scientific discovery to a military operation is a dangerous game.
Starfleet disagrees. Furthermore, you failed to address the issue of mutiny.
I refuse to draw legal conclusions.
Fortunately, we don't have to. Testimony from Crewman Lawrence proved very enlightening.
Jeff found out that our science consultant is hiding classified sensor logs. The captain's in on it, too.
Not to mention the Admiralty for coming up with this whole mission in the first place.
Look, you don't have to sell me on this Romulan collusion theory.
This all does feel like a treaty-friendly way of smuggling the Pacific to the Romulans. I mean, if we're looking for a motivation.
If someone from Starfleet were going to do it, this would be the way to do it. And if so...
We have to do something.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, if this is actually happening, they're going to kill all the witnesses.
We literally only have hours before that starts to happen.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Everything is based on the tractor beams. We combine tractor beams with the Romulans...
No way. Towing won't work.
It's not towing. We can't escape the anomaly, because the warp drive doesn't work with these gravitational frequencies. But... if we could find a reference outside...
Okay, yeah, I get it. We warp along the tractor beam?
And the Romulans get a nice, defenseless Pacific.
Sansweet, this is your department. Is there a way we could disable the Romulans with the tractor beam somehow?
Well, we establish the inner link, but at the right moment, you switch to the exact antiphase. The equipment couldn't handle it. They'd have to rebuild the whole thing from scratch.
Perfect.
It would do the same to us, too. And for us, that's an integrated system. It could do a lot of damage. All of Section A is tied in there.
I don't think that anyone would complain about making that sacrifice for humanity.
So we're plotting a mutiny?
We're gonna take action. What did you expect?
I don't know. Something a little more legal, maybe?
Starfleet Regulation 3 gives provisions for any means necessary.
That's an order for the captain to decide.
A captain who's treasonous?
We don't know that.
All right, we don't know that. But if we don't take this risk, everyone on board could be killed. We could have another war with Romulus. We can stop that. We need your support on this, Jeff. Are you with us?
Yeah, of course. We're in position, sir.
Rig the ship for tractor beam.
Tractor interlink established.
Captain Demir.
Now is really not the time.
I understand, sir. It's urgent.
Really gotta stop doing this. Go ahead.
Captain? There's going to be an attempt to sabotage the rescue operation.
What are you talking about?
They're in tractor control right now. They're going to use it to destroy the Romulans.
Mr. Lawrence, you're confined to your quarters until further notice.
Aye, sir.
Commander.
Yes, sir.
You have the bridge. Hold position and wait for my orders.
Sir, we could just put security on it.
I'll handle this myself. You have the bridge.
Yes, sir. Hold position relative to the Romulans. Give them a standby signal.
The captain thought confronting the mutineers himself was the best course of action.
He likely was trying to avoid reinforcing the suspicion.
You do realize we're discussing a major breach of protocol here. Pacific had personnel aboard who are specially trained to deal with these sorts of situations. And the captain neglected to use them.
Tractor beam is activated!
Shut it down!
We don't have control!
Tractor control. Vendray to Captain Demir.
Your actions and the actions of your captain have resulted in the failure of both the scientific and the military aspects of your mission. If it were up to me, I'd have you charged with negligence.
Starfleet doesn't agree.
At this point, 49 crewmen were lost in total, and I won't even tell you the monetary loss the Starfleet suffered. Not to mention a completely wasted opportunity to study a cutting-edge Romulan ship up close.
Given the situation, the survival of my crew was far more important than any losses Starfleet may have incurred. After the explosion, we struggled for 12 days to restore the Pacific to basic functioning order. Even so, we were rapidly losing life support and had very few options left. Engineering reports that we have a maximum of 18 hours before total reactor failure.
Shuttles?
Are you suggesting a shuttle evacuation?
We could evacuate a total of 70 with the craft that we have on board.
That's over 100 shy, Mr. Owsley.
It would stretch our life support by an extra shift or so. And for those in the shuttles, a fully loaded shuttle would have about 3 days for rescue.
Nobody stands a good chance in this anomaly. Much less separated. And how would they get rescued anyway? Lieutenant Rader, any luck with the gravity harmonics?
It's no good, ma'am. It would take weeks to figure this place out.
Even if we could, we're not going anywhere with one to sell.
The Class C shuttles do have transporters, ma'am. I think they could be used for rescue, even from a safe range.
I couldn't ask anybody to leave the rest of the crew behind just to save themselves.
You wouldn't have to ask. Not me, anyway. I'll stay behind.
Me too.
I'll be here.
Thank you, everybody. But I can't ask for volunteers. This should be my decision. Continue with repairs. I want to get everything we possibly can out of that reactor.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll be in my ready room. Enter. This is my first act as captain. Choosing who lives and who dies. How is that acceptable? How can I make that choice?
Even if you could only save one of us, wouldn't you?
Who would I choose? How would I choose?
That sounded like a very emotionally taxing decision, Commander. But perhaps, if you followed protocol...
I would have preferred to not be stranded with 49 dead crewmen outside the Federation space with no reasonable expectation of rescue. Starfleet put us at risk. Your clever little secret mission put us at risk. Most of us didn't know the risks. How could we have been prepared? How dare you judge me and my crew from the office that authorized this reckless mission?
Perhaps it's best if we conclude here. I hope you can understand my frustration. I thought we could salvage some good from this whole incident. But some missions really are lost causes. Thank you for your time, Commander. You'll be pleased to hear that Starfleet Command does share some of your sentiments. This mission may be the start of an operational overhaul.
Commander Vondre? Pardon me, ma'am.
Lieutenant Whitney, was it?
Yes, ma'am. It's an honor to finally get to meet you face to face.
The honor is mine. I understand you were steering the Velocity that day.
Yes, ma'am, but I think we just got lucky.
Take some credit. Be proud of the role you played. You deserve it.
Helm, we're done here. Set course for the next grid.
Wait. I got something. A huge energy spike, sir.
Helm, cancel the warp. Turn the ship around.
Canceling warp, sir.
Open the shipwide broadcast. Crew of the Pacific, colleagues and friends, this is your acting captain. Right now we find ourselves in a difficult situation, but there's one last thing we must do. The shuttles offer a possibility of survival, but as you know, they cannot carry us all. I intend to...
This is Captain Quavers of the Starship Velocity. Anybody need a hand?
Thank you. Melissa. I'm at the USPA facility in Virginia, and you won't believe what we've... Well, I don't want to spoil it, but meet me at the Rockhold tomorrow at 1800.
So you've been well?
I can't stop thinking about it.
I know. But you know, we made some really incredible discoveries out there. The things that we would have never thought.
People died. Lucy. People died out there. And I was about to make myself responsible for dozens more. Because we had to go out and play Explorer.
It's more than just pretend, Elisa. We found a completely new civilization out there.
Ruins and rocks. And now it's not even that.
Remember those inscriptions that we found?
Yes.
I don't know who they are, but from one of my scans, just look.
What? This can't be. This is a translation.
Read it.
This is poetry. When this arm, once our home dies, we will be far. We sleep on the arm of a green forever. Stillness shrouds our lively place, far from the noise and dust of this star home. Why haven't I heard about this? This is incredible. This is beautiful.
And that's just a fragment of what we have. They think there might be a way to find out where these people have gone. That what we found was just a guidepost. This isn't the end. This is the...
This is Critical, Not Cynical. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed Pacific 201 Part 2. So we're going to talk about that film and just open up with you guys. I really need to know what their budget was on this or how much they spend. It is spectacular. It is not often that you see production value so high.
One of the things that blew me away. I apologize for cutting you off. One of the CGI frames where the guy is sitting outside the ship, working on the ship, you see a little like that, blew me away. You see the detail in the destruction of the ship, the texturing on the CGI model, the little space guy. I mean, seeing the ship just tore up anyway was just, the explosion, that was impressive, but seeing the level of detail in the texturing was mind-blowing. It was awesome. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, man.
There was a shot kind of on a back corner of the ship showing a window and showed the people sitting there in the window kind of, in their quarters there. And to me, it's just all the little details that they did were amazing. Frank, I'm sorry, it looked like you had something you were gonna say right before I jump back in.
I was gonna say, where the hell was that shot?
I'd like to know that too. That is
because I see Glenn Wolf is involved with it. Mm-hmm. Say, I think isn't Sam involved with that, or was it the one I saw after that, the Romulan War? But I know that Wolf was in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a short in the first one. He's in it. So I'm sitting there, and Gabe Argus played the captain. I know he's been down at the neutral zone,
mm-hmm.
and he's supported down there. He, as a matter of fact, did a walk-on for Farragut. So I'm trying to figure out exactly where they shot that.
Because like,
they don't give you anything in the credits.
Yeah, I'd like to know that too, because their location was very impressive too. Backgrounds, location, all of it. The one thing, and I'm going to do something that I don't do that often, jumping right into the critique that I've got, is the ship that was on the rescue mission. I don't know if I quite caught the name. I think it was Victory.
Got it.
Velocity, no, I think.
Velocity.
Okay, okay. Yeah. That little quick barrel roll back over, reverse.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of took me out. I thought that's not happening. Maybe in a fighter or shuttlecraft if you get fancy, but not something any size starship would do. And I thought that was, for everything that was so realistic in this film and so top notch, that was, they should have not done that. And I'm not saying that completely ruins it, but it's like everything. Oh, you were right there. Every little piece of the entire thing was spectacular. But why'd you do that? Am I nitpicking too much?
No, I don't think you are. Like that again, you can call it a gripe or nitpick or whatever. The way I see it is, if you're looking that far into the film and that's your only gripe, I think you did something pretty good. For me, I agree. I sat there when I saw that. I was like, I don't like that part. Everything else in the film I felt was great. And again, I'm not trying to be one of those, you know, hey, if we review it, it's automatically great. You know, there are things that you can gripe about films. I just think this isn't a film that you can generally gripe about it. It's a great film. But that is something that that's not the way a starship would act. Too, I don't think it's a way a good sized starship would act, even if it's on a smaller scale. Even a runabout, I don't think would act that way. It's just not the way the physics of a starship would operate.
Let's put it this way. If you really want to put it that way, guys, the way they depict the starships in Star Trek and Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica, that's not how they actually work.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we get that.
Yeah.
Always meeting face to face, head on. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the maneuverability, I mean, the phasers and everything are kind of nice and stuff like that. And of course, projectiles, but you're more likely to have a space battle where you're throwing rocks at the other ship to, you know, to hit it with velocity to knock a hole in it more than anything else. But I mean, that's just a pure thing. I always go back to this because I think it's more true to life than, you know, our fantasy, not fantasy, but our reality is I go back to something like The Expanse. And if you've seen The Expanse.
I couldn't get into that one.
Yeah, I might have to try again. You have to get through the first season. But once you get through there and you look at it and see how the ships actually operate and how things are, it's more plausible that that's where we're going to be in 200 years and not, you know, further out.
Yeah. And I'm not against nimble ships. Look at the Defiant. I mean, that ship you couldn't hardly touch because it was on doing this stuff and all that. So yeah, I'm totally for it. That was just a little much, little ridiculous.
Yeah. Because of the fact that you don't have any air. I mean, ships are acting like they're flying through the air.
Yeah.
And you don't have any air. You're in a vacuum.
Well, if the thing about it is like it, with the if you had like take Jose Cepeda, like his films, I think a segment like that would have looked just fine in a Jose film, because for him, he kind of lets loose the restrictions of the elements that Star Trek puts on us, the restrictions that we do, and he kind of lets loose that type of canon, and he's like, "Eh, it's fine. Let's just tell a good story, and however it looks is how it looks." But when you compare that one shot to the rest of the CGI and how slow-mo it kind of looks and how the realism of it, and then you compare that shot to the rest of it, it doesn't quite compare. So
I agree.
Apples and oranges, you know, apples to apples, you know, it's just mm-hmm. like, it doesn't quite compare. So it's that sore thumb that sticks out. It would have looked just fine if it was in different context, but when it's compared to itself, like I said, the one shot where the texture, you're looking at the close of the ship, and like Jefferson brought up the people eating, you know, and you can see them in their quarters, and the CGI guy fixing the outside of the ship, or in another shot where the ship's exploding because of the tractor beams getting all fucked mm-hmm. up from the Romulan, you know, it's like you compare that to those shots and it's just yeah. like something's off, you know, and the human eye is meant to, I mean, we naturally look at something, and if something's off, it we pick it out pretty easy. That's why modern AI images, depending on what date somebody watches this review, modern AI images, you know, that's when we pick it out and we're like, something looks off about it, you know, whether it's the six fingers on the hand that we're like, oh, nope, doesn't look right. Or the weird smiling on the faces or look on the faces, you know, we look at it and we're like, this, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the smile. Yeah. It, mm-hmm. it just doesn't look right. You know, it's like the music video, Black Hole Sun. It looks disturbing to us. You know, we're meant to pick out those things that look odd, and that's what that CGI effect looked. But the thing that I really enjoyed about this film, I like the fact that the captain went down there, and we always talk about you, Frank, and I, we've been talking about this for years. And Jefferson, you and I touched about this, I think, last week. Every film tries to do their version of Kirk.
Yeah.
Their science officer, you know, Vulcan science officer, and their cranky doctor. You know, everyone tries to do their version of that and fail. I love the fact that in part two, he tries to do a Captain Kirk and go down and fix it, you know, the problem, and Mitch gets blown up.
And that is a good little twist to it. You would expect that the way he was presented in the beginning of the film, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that he was going to survive the whole thing. But then you kind of get a clue out of it, because if the captain was the one who was responsible for the whole thing, why would Starfleet have her butt on the chair and not his?
Right.
So if you think about it in the beginning, you might say, well, is she the captain? And then she's a commander. And then you see the captain when she starts talking about it. So in the back of your mind, you go, going back to next week, is, okay, how come she's here and not the captain?
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, like the thing that I like about this film is it has a lot of open-ended, it has so much room for interpretation. Like, you can look at this and go, there was no sabotage. There was no super high up involvement from anything. This is just an early organization that hasn't learned from any mistakes. And this is the first one. And you can look at that and go, that's very valid. And you can look at this and go, no, there's so much sabotage on this whole thing and double spies and everything and trust nobody. And that's just as valid, both. And then all the shades of gray in between. And those are just as valid as both the black and white arguments.
Yeah, because the captain is always acting a little suspicious in my book. You know, I caught that at first. I went, okay, so there is something up. So is this collusion or not?
Yeah, and we still, I mean, you can watch it 10 times till Tuesday, and you still don't know. And I love the fact, like, I mean, we could have the writers on here and be like, what do you think? And I think the writers would be like, I don't know, what do you think? You know, I love that. The fact that we all can watch this from a different, you know, we can walk out of the movie theater and go, man, you know, that's not the movie I saw.
Right.
You know, and I love that. You know, and it's those type of movies that you could watch it again and find deeper meaning. And the fact that, like, at the end of the movie, the fact that they found a civilization, I really thought that lady with the glasses, I was about to be like, bitch, you're going to get you. She's going to get you. She's going to poison your lemonade there. She's going to, you know, and I thought, there's going to be plenty of ears underneath the, you know, she removes glasses, plenty of ears, you know.
A double
and,
cross.
Like, none of that. Yeah. And it was like, hey, check out this cool poem. You know, and again, like I'm reading, they're going, is there going to be like magic voodoo in the poem? Is she going to get you that way? You know, like, you know, but it wasn't. It was, hey, this is the heart of Star Trek. And all those deaths were, you know, we found a new civilization. And this was, may not make you feel good, but those deaths, the price, this was the cost of it, you know? And it is kind of worth it, because it's like, how many people died on the wagon trail? You know, how many people died for, you know, to come across to discover America? How many people died, you know, to settle, you know, early civilization? You know, it's like people die when we discover
how many died discovering flight?
Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like whenever we have new discoveries, you know, a lot of the time there are always sacrifices, you know, and that's, you know, it's not always pleasant, but it's sometimes the cost. And that's, you know, we're watching the story here from a point of view of sabotage and conspiracy and all this. And then all of a sudden the ending pulls out and we're like, no, here's the story. Discovery, space, mm-hmm. the final frontier. And it's like, man, if that's not Star Trek, man.
Yeah.
And again, you can still watch it and go, well, there's still so much story there, possibly. And you want to see that continue.
That's like a line that I wrote when we were doing Haunted. And as I walk down the bridge and I'm walking around, I say, you know, man has always, or to the effect that, you know, since the days of pioneers, they've gone over that mountain. Some of them don't come back, but we still go over that mountain because that's how we're made. Those who stay behind are not the explorers, but take a look at the people that are explorers that continue forward. If it hadn't been for the adventurers, you wouldn't have had, you know, the beginning of the colonization. There's a good science fiction book. It was a short story that I read years ago where the end of it was the fact that they were talking about this generation ship that was going. And everybody was saying how crazy the two guys were in a bar with the bartender and everything else. And the way it sounds, you're on Earth and they're just saying you shouldn't take these risks. At the end, the guy just throws the glass up in the air and it spins around the moon. You know, and it's just the fact that we're here in the moon. They said you couldn't go there, but now we're sending out another ship. So you're always going to have that. If we don't kill each other, we have that hop, skip and a jump.
Yeah, there's always going to be that sacrifice and discovery. And you're right, talking about the flying, you're going to be up there because once you get about, I mean, what would you say, about 10 feet above ground, that's when you start getting to where if you drop and hit the wrong way, you're talking about either seriously injuring yourself or death. Maybe more.
Yeah, you can fall on the ground right now and get your head on a rock.
True. Yeah. You don't have to be up high. And that's,
you don't have to be up high.
And that's the thing, is you're getting up there into the sky. And how long, what do you think it took in sacrifice, and how long did it take before we figured out, oh, it's horses we can ride. Can't mess around with the lions. Can't ride these. I'm not worried about the first guy that rode a bull. I'm worried about the second guy. I mean, who looks at that and says, huh, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that, too.
A person who takes risk and challenge.
Yeah.
Hey, that guy did it and he got killed. I'm going to do it and not get killed. That's what it is. Think about it. Hey, that guy failed, but I know I can do better. So 17 people down the road, somebody finally manages to survive. And it becomes rodeo, you know.
So here's a question that I want to pose for you guys. What do you think happened to the guy who reported the espionage? What do you think happened to him? Because the last we see of him, he's just kind of chilling out and in his quarters of the captain. You know, the captain, you know, sends him off. And that's the last we hear of him. You know, he's kind of engaging in all this conspiracy BS. But that's the last we see of him. We don't see any, there's no conclusion to his storyline. And I kind of was like, man, what happened to him? Because in a sense, he's kind of the catalyst for, hey, Captain, you're dead. Hey, friends, you're dead. Hey, ship, you're crippled. I mean, it's not his fault, but in a sense, it's like, I mean, a lot of that has to weigh on his heart. But there's no conclusion to his story. What do you think happened to him?
Well, didn't he immediately go straight to the captain and reveal what they were planning?
He did, right? The last we saw him, he was in the captain sent him to, confined him to quarters, yep. And that's the last we saw him. But we see. I think she's talking to the crew like, hey guys, we're gonna abandon. You know, here's who I'm gonna abandon the ship. You know, to, and then the other ship, the Velocity, comes up. It's like, hey guys, you know. Party time, you know, but that's the last we see him is there, but we never get a conclusion.
We do know he survives.
No, we know he survives, but
yeah, because they said because of his testimony, we know this, this, and this.
Right.
So he's already talked to Starfleet, so he's probably now on another assignment, or he's probably, you know, even part of the crew, or he might have transferred, but he did have that pivotal role of bringing some of this information to the security office, and they, you know, briefed him and stuff like that. So he told the story. So he's still part of that, you know, integral part of the story. We just don't see him physically.
I think in the confines of a 20-minute fan film that you're not going to always get that follow-up, you know, on certain characters. And when something like that happens, I get what you're saying. However, I felt like, okay, he alerted the captain. That's great. He's going to the brig, get dealt with later. All right. That was all I needed to see. I didn't think that there was any, if they had done that, I think that would have added to, would have presented a criticism that I had on the first one. And Frank Vance and I talked about part one last week. And one of the main criticism that I had was the pacing of that one. I felt like it could have, you could have taken some out of that. Just because there were some points where I just felt like, you know, this is in part one, there were a few things where I just thought this is going on just a little more than it should. And I didn't feel that way with part two.
Yeah, I for me, the part one, I liked that it was about the conspiracy, the who do we believe, who do we not. To me, I felt like that was kind of dropped after. I don't know. I really wish there was a little bit more resolution with that aspect of it. Cause it really, I don't know. Like it was such a good, it built such a world that I'm like, man, I wish there was a part three. I really would like to have known like what happened to these characters, what happened to them. He was such an integral part of the first one. And with the second one, even though it was vital what he did, he didn't get much to do. And I felt like, man, that's an important piece. Like you did the right thing, but you fucked up a lot of shit. Captain's death is on your hands. The crewman's death. I mean, how would he feel? And I think that right there would have been at least a good 5 minute, at least a scene amongst itself, maybe with the captain going like, hey, I'm about to order some people to his death. You have guilt. You both have shared guilt. Like, I think that would have been a great scene in itself. Or maybe once you get back to Earth, like having that shared guilt of like all these people's lives on your hands. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think some type of resolution would have been nice, especially to in the first one. It was I did not like him in the first one. I thought, man, you're kind of running your mouth. And then in the second one, it was just like, where'd you go? You know, even though, you know, the captain's like, all right, go to your quarters, get away from me. now I'm going to go have a great death, I don't know. That's just to me that and that's not a gripe. It's not because I agree with you on pacing and maybe if they took my route of, hey, add this in, maybe it would have slowed the film down. My films have the tendency to kind of be slow paced that way. Because I agree with you, the pacing of this film was great. And I don't think either film was slow for me. I think both films needed to be exactly what they wanted. The first one was a conspiracy. The second one was, how do we deal with this? And we're Gilligan's Island except in space and we're fucked. What do we do? So I feel like both films needed to be exactly what they needed to be, no more, no less. So for me, I don't have any gripe on pacing for either one. So maybe if they had added what I kind of personally wanted to see, it would have been, man, this film needs 5 minutes cut. what I mean? So,
I mean, for me, I wish they had a few scenes of what was technically going on the Romulan vessel. I think to me, to have a little bit more insight, back and forth and put a little bit of a little bit more suspense in it and, key it up even more as to, hey, is this really a conspiracy or not? Because they're sending things back and forth to the captain and have a little bit of interaction. But then again, I like to see a little bit more alien interaction, especially if it's Romulan. If it's Klingon, I could care less. Sorry, guys. I'm a Romulan. I always will be a Romulan. And
It's something we talked about.
Calls me a Packlet.
Well, it's something we talked about last week. Like, everybody always does the Klingons.
Yep.
And I don't give two shits about Klingons. It's more interesting to see the Romulans show up. Just because it's like they're not used as much, So here to see the Romulans show up, especially where it's time era appropriate, it's great. And I love the ships that they have because I was not a fan of seeing the Romulans in Enterprise, those ships, because even though I liked how they looked, the green bird of prey, TOS looking bird
of prey. They were awesome.
No, they looked good, but I don't feel like they were appropriate for that era.
No, they probably should have been a little bit more clunkier. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. No, and the thing is, like, you can't go from, hey, we've got these green-looking birds of prey, which feel very TNG-like because they're green, and then we go to the gray with the bird at the bottom. I mean, you look at the design, green bird of prey, gray with the bird at the bottom, green Dirigeris class, like, I mean, there. I mean, that it sticks out. Oh, yeah,
talking about the Derridex.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it, and I know I'm going to get chewed up in the comments from people who are like, you fat fuck, you don't know what you're talking about.
My favorite class, though, is the Valdor.
The Valdor is nice.
I love the Valdor.
Which one's Valdor?
That's the one that's got the outswept wings. Was that Nemesis?
That was Nemesis in the Battle of the Basin Rift.
I feel like it was a good looking ship. I feel like it was ruined by the battle it was in because it had too many phasers just going pew, 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 pew. And it's like, man, it needed more of a Wrath of Khan vibe. But that's nitpick of the film.
I never liked the Dirigex. They just seemed too big and too bulky for me.
They were huge.
I wish they had been. Yeah, they were huge. You could put to me
a galaxy class starship inside the open space.
Yeah, in
those ships.
Yeah, I love those because I felt they were. I felt they had that presence of like you remember in Independence Day how those ships like they spent like almost 45 minutes in the buildup before you even saw the aliens. Ships were just slow on coming. And that, to me, that's what those ships represented. The slow coming mass. Like, we're going to take our time getting there, but when we get there, we're going to fuck you up. And that's like, to me, it's like, that's what was so scary about them was like, because they came up slow. And then when they were like, all right, yeah, Picard, we're back. And then they slowly.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking about that scene when they came up the first time and they were just. That's a little bit bigger than the old D7s.
Yeah.
I mean, they had presence to them. You know, I'm a huge fan of those, you know, just because, and the fact that they have that openness to them, like, it's, to me, it's like, they're so different than most, they're visually different, you know? But going back to what I was saying before, like when you go to the Enterprise era and then TOS era and then next gen, like it's just color-wise, it looks nothing like what it should. So seeing this, this was a great visual for the Romulan ship. I thought, well, this looks very dumbed down for a Romulan ship, and I liked this approach as opposed to something that looked like it could fit in the 24th century. You know, I really liked it. I liked it a lot. And the fact that we don't get to see the Romulans a lot. Something that I thought would have been kind of cool, and again, this is something that would probably ruin the film if they had done it. I think we saw one visual of us on the Romulan bridge.
Yes.
I think. I think it would have been cool if they had just like pressed a button and said, we're receiving the secret communication or something like
or
that.
Or something like that. Or you know, it's piggybacked on, we've got the communication is piggybacked on this or something like that.
And that, like something that would have said like, oh shit, who is it? Because then we still wouldn't have known like who it was. Was it the captain? Was it the crew members? Was it the lady with the glasses with the fucked up poem? Like who it? Like, you know, to me, it just would have been like, that would have added to a mystery. But again, you wouldn't have gotten the, everybody can look at the film from several different perspectives, but to me, it would have added the mystery of like, who are you talking about? You know? Cause again, like, are those crew members who are sabotaging the tractor beam or whatever? Like, are they trying to cover their tracks? Are they trying to destroy it? Like what exactly is going on? Like, to me, it just would have added to a story and the conspiracy, you know? What do you guys think of that?
Well, so here's what I want to ask you guys. Because this was something that was bothering me, and it relates to, well, really what you're saying, Vance, and the whole thing. So one of the things that I was asking myself in the first episode here in the second one, unless I missed something, isn't someone here has crossed past the neutral zone. I'm thinking I'm going to say it's the Romulan ship because the neutral zone was established by now after the Romulan war. So there's a couple of things I had a problem with. One, how's Romulan ship? What are they even doing there? Two, isn't destroying their ship an act of war? Three, are you telling me the Romulan high command wouldn't, they're totally, we have no idea what happened. We don't know where the ship was. I don't think I can quite buy that. And now what am I missing?
Possible deniability.
Because they weren't. Why were they there? Remind me.
See, that's the thing. Why were they there? They were doing some type of, but Romulans have always had this sneaky habit, especially with the cloaks, of coming over into space. And unless you, before they had the ability to with tachyons to be able to find the cloaking, they couldn't detect where they were. Even the Romulans said they couldn't in Enterprise, in TOS, the Romulan female commander says they can't even detect our cloak. We can't detect our own cloaking. So my question has always been, why not? Why don't the Romulans come into the space more if they can't be detected?
You're right. So, they probably are. I think that, it's an act of war. And that's,
it is an act of war. Yes.
I think what Frank said is absolutely true. The plausible deniability. If the Romulans are pissed that you destroyed one of our ships, that's admitting that you were there illegally. If the Romulans say, we have no idea why they were there.
They were a rogue ship.
Yeah, they must have been off course. So we don't know. They had no, I mean, rogue ship or not, even if you had no idea, you know, like, it's kind of like you're swimming and you peek your head up above water and you're like, oh shit, I'm on the wrong side of the pool. Okay, but you're not supposed to be there. Get your ass back to your side. Like, you're still in trouble. You're not supposed to be there. And that's the same thing. Hey, if you decloak and you're like, fuck, I'm on Federation space, you're not supposed to be here, my friend. So go back. And the fact that we haven't destroyed your ship is because you're in our good graces. So the fact that you're sitting here saying, hey, we'll help you. Yeah, you may be nice, but that, I mean, we're taking you at your word. They have every right to destroy the Romulan ship because you are on the wrong side of the neutral zone. So if you admit, yeah, they were there on our orders, well, that is an act of war. You're in the wrong. Now, that's assuming you care that you're going to war with Earth. But the fact that you just got out of a heavy war with Earth and all their allies, I mean, because it wasn't Starfleet's war with Earth. That was the Earth-Romulan war. And that's
actually, I wanted to bring that up. I happened to watch that right after I was watching part two. I was laying in bed watching it. I'd like to do that next week.
Do what?
The Romulan War.
Oh, do that for next week?
Oh, yeah, there's a film called the.
Yeah.
We ought to.
It's like an hour and a half. Like it's a
no, not the one that. Not the one that I saw. There may be a longer version, but this was a very short 20-minute or so film.
You're talking about the newer one. I thought you were talking about the one that's like a big, big film. Okay. All right.
I haven't seen that one.
I will send that one to you. And
yeah.
Yeah.
How did I miss a Romulan film?
Right.
February may be like Romulan month for us.
Yeah, really.
It's a great film. But no, like the Romulan Wars was the Earth Romulan War. It wasn't a Starfleet thing. Starfleet didn't come into effect until about 10 years after the Earth Romulan War. So, I mean, we're assuming the Romulans don't want to be at war with us, you know, and that's why they would, like Frank said, plausible deniability. So again, there's a lot of, like they were saying, there's a lot that could be accomplished by the Romulans helping here. And us taking that hand and just, you know, that friendly hand of gesture. But then again, the other ones were right by saying, yeah, but there's a lot of, do we want to trust these people? Should we trust these people? They could kill us here and make away with our ship. Like, there's a lot of reason to distrust these people who just got done attacking your home planet a couple of years ago. Like, I mean, there's both sides of the argument. Neither side's wrong. But it's how much of today's society could be locked up in the same thing. You know,
you see, if you go into, and I'm not going to get into a long dissertation on it because I could speak for hours, but if you go into the actual Romulan culture and do some more research into it, if you go to footferret.com/Rihansu, you'll find the stuff that I, you know, saved many years ago. And it's got all that type of stuff with their belief systems there and stuff like that. And you'll see that the culture is based more on the Roman type of culture, where the Klingons are more the, you know, you know, battle raising. And there's more cunning in Romulan culture. So something like this makes sense for them to come into an area like this. Humanitarian. As a matter of fact, I think there's quite a few times in Star Trek where the Romulans have been on a humanitarian mission.
Right. Quote unquote. Yeah. For anyone listening to this, not watching the video, there's big rabbit ears we're putting around the humanitarian mission that Romulans
are doing. That's right.
I think you're right. What you guys are saying makes sense on the whole plausible deniability part. Well, with that being said, I do think that on the Starfleet side, that there was a lot of they were risking another big confrontation with the Romulans or war just from what they were doing. Let's say that Romulus didn't sell out that ship. It could have been, things could have been a lot uglier than they were. But, you know, to have an adversary, you couldn't use You could have used the Klingons. You could have used the Romulans. Really, there was at this time period, those are the two main antagonists to the Federation. But like you guys said before, I'm glad that it was something other than Klingons. Klingons are overdone. Even I think maybe we could see a little more of Gorn or the ones that did the web that caught the
Tholians.
My brain is just done.
it's super late, man. I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
Sure.
I don't know if you covered this last week and this week, but what do you think of the security guy? The one who is asking all the questions. He's asking her, putting her on the spot. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? Did you have any feelings about that?
I think that guy was a fucking double agent, man. Is that, I mean, if I don't, is Section 31, I mean, I know Section 31 is like overused and everything. I mean, someone sneezes wrong, you think Section 31. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. I know he says, oh, we might use this as a way to fix up future mission. Man, fuck you, dude. You know what you were doing, you piece of crap. I mean, it's...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I know they were trying to play it like we've got hidden motivations and oh, we're slimy. To me, it's just, I kind of feel like they should have played it a little different. And that's probably my only other second critique. And I strain to use that word. I would have played it a little bit more like Admiral Lichayev or Shelby, Commander Shelby from Best of Both Worlds. Come in, play it very antiseptic, very take the emotion out. Don't make her the back. Like, just play it very by the book. Like, you're not. You're playing it like you've got something, but you're not. But you've got something, but you're... Don't play it like that. Just play it very by the book. Mm-hmm. Doing it like that makes it seem like you have like there's several layers there, but you're keeping yourself guarded.
But you see, that's exactly how I would have done it. To get that suspense of layers to find out. Now, this is the way that government agencies and military intelligence actually work. They don't care about the lives lost.
Yeah, and
they care about the intel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see the way this guy played it, it reminded me of like a bad manager at your job. Who's like, why didn't we get those numbers we needed to get? How come we didn't hit that goal we didn't get?
What's wrong with your TPS report?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, I don't take you seriously. Fuck off, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you come in here and do it? Like, do it yourself, man. Fuck off. Like, I don't.
But she didn't take him serious. That was the key to the thing. Her reactions were perfect for the way he was sitting there, especially when she drilled him and says, how dare you say this to me after what you guys set us up to?
Mm-hmm.
No, I know for me, the character didn't work. The character itself just didn't work. Maybe they're trying to justify by saying that this is where Starfleet course corrects on something, you know, but again, to me, it's just the whole thing that aspect I found myself kind of tuning out, because it's like, I've seen it done better. And that was the only part of the thing where I kind of lost interest. I didn't care for that aspect. I just didn't buy it.
Yeah. I didn't see it was as I bought it. I didn't have a problem with it, but it's interesting to see how, that's why I wanted to see what your feelings were.
Was that the guy, Vance, that we were talking about last week that I said that he should not have brought up all the stuff on the bridge that's the kind of thing that I felt more realistically you would take that to the captain's ready room or something and not start a whole kerfuffle on the bridge talking about that guy over there is playing Galaga.
Bad leadership.
Thought we wouldn't notice stuff like that.
I thought you were talking about the debriefing. I thought you were talking about the Starfleet Command debriefing guy.
Yeah, the Starfleet. That's what I was talking about.
Oh, you're talking about that guy. Okay.
The one
that has the commander, and he's asking her all these questions. You know.
When you said the security guy, I was thinking on the ship.
Yeah, and I can see how that happened. Bad prank.
I took it as he was doing his job.
Now we're going to hear your you're going to agree with Vance. I can see it in your eyes.
I just took it as he was doing his job. There wasn't really anything that jumped out at me that said something is wrong with this guy or he's up to something or whatever. I just, nothing keyed my spidey sense on him. He just seemed like, yeah, this is just, this is what he's doing. This was the issue. And you're going to have to be questioned about it.
To me, like the only thing missing from the guy was him just going like this with his hands. Like, it's like, am I really, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Like Quigley on Mutiny on the Kane Mutiny.
I
thought he did fine. That's the exactly, I think, the kind of environment, the kind of questioning you're going to get in a situation like this, because you're talking about a near mutiny on a Starfleet vessel. The actions resulted in the destruction of a Romulan ship that they could have gotten a hold of and spent all kinds of time learning more about. The guy wasn't going to be nice about the whole thing.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It was reversed. They thought that they were going to be taking the Pacific, not the Pacific taking the Romulan ship.
See, to me, the guy just seemed like a chatty Cathy. Like when you're going in there and you're like, all right, report what you said. And you feel like that, was the wise course of action. And that's not what all your crew said happened. How do you think this event went? Like, not that guy. That guy's like, well, your captain said you went this way, and the officer said you went this way, and is that sure exactly how you went that way? And what were your emotions on this? And what did you think? Man, dude, why don't you just write the transcript? I mean, you got the whole goddamn report right there. I mean, man, if this guy was playing poker, he'd be like, well, hey, I got four things here, and you'll never guess what card this one is. I mean, it's just, again, like, when you go into something like that, you play a very... very antiseptic. You play it very, very cold. You know, not quite as cold as "Good morning, Mr. Anderson." You know, don't do that shit. But this guy, he's just chatty Cathy. You know, I mean, to me, that's not the way I'd play it. And then at the end, go, oh, well, we might change a few things. Yeah, getting rid of your ass is probably number one in my book. that's not how I hold an organization.
Tell us what you really think, Vance.
I do think that he could have that role for what the character was doing, and the character was probably could have been played a little more of the straight man. Maybe just toned down just a skosh, more of a kind of direct. And you're right. Now that I know who you're talking about, Frank, the Admiral Nechayev and Commander Shelby reference makes sense.
I feel like this guy's an inmate that escaped and took that guy's place, and he's just playing pretend, and she doesn't know who the fuck this guy is. So that's why it's like, man,
I'm
going to
blow
annoying.
Up our warp core.
Hey, guys, I got to let you go. So let me cut out. So, all right,
yeah,
guys.
Well, I think we pretty much covered it. There was nothing else that I had. You good, Frank?
I'm fine, even though he just shot
my thoughts all to hell. It's okay, I know that.
We'll get them next
week.
That's
what I do. That's what I do. Hey, next week, if we do the Romulan Wars.
We'll do that one. Yeah, we'll do that. It's a good one.
We'll do that one, and I'll sit there, and I'm going to restudy some of my stuff, and we'll get you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys, for sitting with us. Thank you, everyone, for watching, listening, and live long and prosper.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.